Good morning, Pensacola. It is Monday, June 5th. We got a long week ahead of us, but it's summer, and we can truly, truly start to enjoy it. It'll get hot, but also there are a lot of things going on, a lot of things to enjoy, and the beach is just beautiful right now. So take advantage of all of it. We're going to open the show today with Commissioner Jeff Burgosh. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, glad to. You've got a town hall tonight, 6 to 8 at Beulah Middle School. What's on the agenda?
Well, we're gonna have an introduction and some remarks by all the locally elected officials. Michelle Salzman will be there, Kevin Adams from the school board, Vicki Campbell, myself. We've invited Sheriff Simmons, so hopefully he'll be able to make it or send a representative. And then the primary topic, Rick, is just going to be OLF 8. There's been multiple op-eds put out in the news journal, a lot of them with some misinformation. So we're going to be very Exactly. Lots of that. Lots of misinformation, lots of disinformation. So one of the things that I've prepared for tonight is a detailed PowerPoint, which I am going to provide to the audience. There'll be a way for them to download it and get it themselves. And it's got all the links to all the relevant documents. I mean, there's this fiction out there that this whole OLFA evolution is just 9 years or 10 years in the making, which is absolutely untrue. It's been since 1997, and I've got all the documentation. It'll be on the PowerPoint. So we got to set aside the fiction. And then the other myth we're going to bust is this idea that I don't listen, that the board doesn't listen. That's just ridiculous. We do listen. We carefully consider what people want. But when you got five or six people that keep saying the same thing over and over, and we listen to them, and we try to work with them, but just because we don't do precisely what a half dozen people want us to do doesn't mean we're not listening. We have to listen to everyone. That means thousands of people. That means 300,000 people in this county that put a lot of money into this field for investments, for jobs. So that's what we're doing, and I know it frustrates about a half dozen people.
Well, you know, and you're right. You know, I did a story on it back during the controversy 2 years ago went through the archives, talked to the people that were involved in the very beginning. OLF 8 was an active field that was used by Whiting Field for helicopter landings. And the county and the Chamber of Commerce were looking. That's the last big piece of land that was available off of an interstate exit in Escambia County. All the other ones have been filled with housing, with commercial, you know, all of the other places were taken. And it was the chamber and the county who really came together to say, okay, let's explore this. Jim Cronley took it on for the chamber. Several times, that's where Navy Federal was part of that, was sort of a little experiment to try to do something out there to see just a really small commercial area. It boomed. Navy Federal saw the advantages. A lot of money was spent over this 25-year process, and just all of a sudden turn it over and let it become, you know, a town center for the people that have moved in the last 10 years just doesn't seem to be right for the rest of the county to you know, do this for their pleasure.
Well, exactly, and that's why I remain somewhat frustrated. But here's the deal, Rick. You know, I wanted all jobs. That's what I wanted, with some retail up front for the residents and a track going around and a park. I got outvoted. It's just that simple. You know, the people came in. There was some pressure applied by some special interests. You could probably work out which ones. And we ended up with a compromise. So, look, I'm a man of my word. I stick to the compromise. The unique thing that happens with this evolution, though, Rick, is at every turn we're blamed for things that we're not doing before they even happen. We were blamed for wasting money. You're never going to get the field. The Navy's going to – and you're wasting money. Well, that was wrong. We didn't waste money. We ended up acquiring an asset for a good price that we're going to turn and make a lot of money. Then you're just going to put smokestacks and crushing machines. No, we're not. We were never going to do that. In fact, we had a plan with the Restore Act, a $1.5 million plan, to master plan it. Well, luckily for the taxpayers, Navy Federal stepped in and covered the cost, and we were able to transfer that money to ST, which is another good thing. So, you know, now the whole thing is, well, you're just going to let D.R. Horton build houses. No, we're not. We passed the master plan. I stand by the master plan. I've said that publicly over and over. It's just a handful of people, about six people. You know, they take turns writing these op-eds. They put out misinformation. They try to put words in our mouth, but they get very frustrated with me because I correct them. Every time they say something wrong about me or this board, I'm going to correct them with the facts. That's the way this works.
Well, where are we with the negotiations with D.R. Horton and Sterling Properties?
I've been in communications with the folks at Horton. You know, there are other interested parties now, too. I mean, this is getting complex. There's a local person that's interested. I've had a meeting with them as well. They sent an initial offer. It was unworkable. We sent it back, and I think that's where we're at right now. I think the ball's in their court. I invited them to the town hall. I even reached out to Marina Curry from DPZ, invited her to the town hall. We'll see who shows up and who doesn't. The bottom line is, Rick, the listeners need to know this. The board made a decision. We made a compromise. We're going to stick with at least 250 acres to create high-tech, clean-tech, high-paying jobs. And the rest of it, you know, I lost the battle. I didn't want any more housing on the field. I know we need more housing, but like you said, that's the last big parcel near an interstate where we can generate these big jobs. You know, I lost that battle, and unfortunately, we got to have some housing there. I never wanted it, not one house. And I'm very, very clear. The record's very clear on that. And might I also say this? The vast majority of the residents I represent in Beulah didn't want any housing on that field either. Again, right. We get back to this small handful of people who wanted this thing and one, you know, large special interest that wanted it for their benefit. But the people that live out here, they see what I see. That's part of the reason I ran for this office. There's so much housing being built out here. It's outpacing the infrastructure. So I want to sell that property. I want to honor the compromise in the master plan, which I will do for my vote. And then I want to take the proceeds of that, Rick, and spread it around this district. There are so many unfunded infrastructure needs in this district. This is a great windfall, and it'll allow us to spread $5 to $6 million per district all around the county. We can use sidewalks, drainage, streets. That's what I'm going to do, and that's what I'm going to talk about tonight at the town hall.
We got with us Commissioner Jeff Burgosh. His town hall is at Beulah Middle School tonight from 6 to 8 o'clock. Jeff, the other topic that I know is on our listeners' minds, and I get asked about it a lot, is the public access on Perdido Key. What's happening there?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that question. Another very, very big topic in District 1. Well, Rick, I have been riding the county attorney's office like a horse. I'll just put it that way. And I say that lovingly because I've really worked them. I call them morning, noon, and night, and God bless them to their credit. They have worked and done yeoman's work in getting every single title abstract for every single parcel on the Gulf side of Perdido Key in District 1. And what we have found out is there's a giant tract to the west of the state park that came directly from the president to a handful of families, no beach access. Okay. We get it. Then there are 64 lots in the Gulf Beach subdivision that in 1957 were transferred, and each and every one of them has a 75-foot easement for public use. And then, and that goes from the state park to Perdido Sky. From Perdido Sky over to Johnson's Beach, every single one of those parcels has been analyzed. They were all given, they were all deeded out in 1912 by the State Board of Education. Very interesting, very fascinating, but no deeded public beach access there. So what we end up with is we've got about a mile and a half of beach that has a 75-foot easement in the sandy beaches from the shoreline north. And we've got to find the best way to access it. We have two beach accesses there, two and three. So what I'm doing now is I'm looking for areas we can add additional parking because, you know, you have a long stretch of beach, but there's no way for people to access it without violating, you know, people's private property. And you can't march through a private condo complex. So I got to find a way to do that. And we're looking aggressively. But overall, Rick, it's a big win for people. It's a big win for access. It's a huge win for safety because we are going to put lifeguards at Access 2 and 3. And I'm going to try and negotiate with the folks at Access 1 around there, maybe to get some access in exchange for a lifeguard. We'll see. All they can do is tell me no. The other thing I'm doing is I've spoken with Alex Andrade. There is a large stretch of state beach out there that just sits there. There's a parking lot that's never been, you know, reopened.
Right.
I'd like to work with him to take that over and open that up and get some parking out there for additional beach access. Because here's the most important thing for your listeners to know. There is beach access out there that's not accessible. And one of the biggest things I'm going to do for the remainder of my time in this office is make sure every inch of that beach that's accessible and should be accessible by the public is made accessible. That's my mission down there.
Well, you know, you can drive over there on a weekend, Perdido Key, and realize there's demand for it. You have, I mean, people are those little narrow public access that the county has visible right now. Is you see people park across the street, try to figure out how to, I mean, the parking fills up very, very quickly. This is a huge win for the citizens of Escambia County. And if you could get the state park component, and you're right, I've driven by and seen they still haven't repaired it. If we could get access to that too, then we will have, gosh, maybe tripled, quadrupled the public access over in Perdido Key.
Yes, and then come the services. We're going to have some areas for folks to have food trucks. I mean, we want to do all these things, but we've got to have a place to park it all. We don't have the space right now. Sadly, we've got a couple of standalone restrooms there, constantly vandalized.
Right.
So sad. You know, we have other public beaches that are, you know, somewhat attended with lifeguards and various folks, but these are unattended. And we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars fixing toilets, fixing fixtures ripped off the wall, mirrors broken. So they're locked up now. We've got porta potties out there. So eventually we're going to tear those down. We're going to tear those down and probably put porta potties there and put nice fencing around them or whatever the case might be. But we can't afford to waste taxpayers' money on the vandalism that continues out there. And in exchange for doing that, we'll get additional parking in those small lots as well. So that's a challenge. It's very sad. It happens out at Beulah Park as well. You know, I don't understand. You put something, a good amenity out there for the people, and a small handful of people ruin it for everyone else. So we'll have a porta potty out there, you know, but sadly, the good things, unfortunately, bad people ruin good things for good people.
Well, you know, the more people you have in an area, more people using an area, the more activated, God, I hate to use that word, but that's the new buzzword, more activated an area is, that the traffic improves. Rather than hurting it, the more traffic you get, the less likely someone's going to vandalize it if you've got a situation set up. Particularly if you think about that state park area, if you keep it gated and then, you know, set it up somewhere where it can open up at some part, you know, that could be a very safe place for people to go. So I sounds like a plan, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm working it, man. I've talked to Alex Andrade. The ball's in his court. He's going to be setting up a meeting between he, myself, and the director of state park system. See what can be done, what kind of use agreement we could work. I mean, it's just sitting there. I drive by it every day. It's a travesty.
Maybe a lease agreement. If they won't do sell it, a lease agreement. Just lease it to you.
Yes, exactly. And we'll take it. We'll operate it. I'll put the money. I've got discretionary money. We can do it. There's a demand for it. And one final thing, and I know that we've gone long here, Rick. I've probably blown through your second segment, but I appreciate the time because this is very important and a very important point. During the summer, Johnson's Beach, people go, well, just go to Johnson's Beach. Number one, there's a big cover charge, 12
right.
bucks per person or 25 per car. A lot of people can't afford that, and really it's not right. But the other part of that is the minute they fill, they shut that gate.
Right.
So you've got people fighting to get the traffic to get there, and then they get there and they get turned around. There's no place for them to go. So, you know, if you're a wealthy person, yeah, go to Johnson's Beach. That's great. Go further down, go to the state park. But we should have a component out there for the folks who live here, work here, and don't really have a whole lot of disposable income. And those are the people I'm fighting for, Rick.
Well, that's how you grew up on the. That's how you grew up.
That's right.
Using
Amen,
Perdido.
Brother. And I used to walk those beaches. People go, well, there's. I've had a few people tell me, well, they're not going to drag a cooler that far from the park. You know what? Yes, they will. Me and my dad walked up and down that beach, up and down. We'd find a fishing hole. We'd move on. Up and down. Now we weren't carrying big coolers and stuff, our fishing poles, our sand spikes. But we did, and so people will. I know they will, and I just want to restore that so young people like I was back then can have the same opportunity I have, not have to look at a bunch of ugly no trespassing signs.
Right.
We've already got that taken care of. We're in the process of getting those cleaned up, and we're going to be making a bonfire out of those. That's what we're going to do with those.
Yeah, all right. Have a great town hall tonight. We'll follow up. I'd love to hear how it goes later. We'll do a follow-up later. But thank you, Jeff, for coming
on. Rick.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Have a great week. Thank you.
You too. All right, let's go ahead and break. We'll give you the news, weather, and traffic. We'll come right back.
I've no reason for the things I fear, the things that plague me when I see and hear. Dime's a nickel and a nickel's none. I throw myself into the Sunday sun. A summer Sunday when
welcome back. We're Pensacola's first radio station. Cowboy Mouth headlined Hawkshaw Festival 2007. We finally paid those bills a couple of years ago. Jeff DeWeese and I did. We both carried the burden for that one.
I was just telling that story the other day. Somebody was saying, whatever happened to Springfest? And so I told that story.
Well, we started off Hawkshaw, and the name of it we wanted to use was Festival formerly known as Springfest. Springfest got upset and threatened to sue us, so we came up with Hawkshaw.
Cowboy Mouth playing a free show tonight over in Daphne at the waterfront. The waterfront is Panini Pete's, his new restaurant. He's got several restaurants, and he's He's actually a foodie on a lot of he gets a lot of time on television as well. So obviously there's some sort of connection there. But they're going to do a free show. I'm hearing that they're going to let in the first 100 at 6 o'clock. So you know, it's all they're right, saying to right. bring your chairs. So in case you don't get in, you
drop
can
the other, do the other thing. The other thing, you text Fred yesterday, Fred LeBlanc, the drummer.
Yeah, well, Karen was worried we weren't going to get in, that it wasn't going to be worth trying because on there. And I said, okay, let me see, I'll handle it.
So, but what's happened? What did Fred do?
He's going to get us in.
He's going to get you in. Now. I want pictures. The other thing I do is I recommend do not put anything on Twitter because Elon will get jealous.
Stop it. I tell you what, today's kicking off Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, the WWDC. It's happening in California. And it looks like they're going to be showing off something pretty exciting. It's an upscale virtual reality headset, you know, the wave of the future. Our own Mike Dabuski from ABC News, the technology reporter, and our friend is going to be joining us a little bit later in the show from the conference to talk about that.
That's right. And then you've got to go get your hair done and everything for Fred tonight. So, listen, my daily outtakes, Operation Brownsville, another weekend, another shooting. I think it's a legitimate question to ask, is Operation Brownsville doing anything? Did Sheriff Chip Simmons pick the wrong neighborhood, or is he driving people to other parts of the county? I mean, just look at just in the last 10 days. These are some of the headlines. No arrest in triple shooting last week at Cantonment Park. One dead, four shot during party. One man dead after being shot multiple times. You know, hundreds gather for May Day event in Cantonment. Three shot. You know, it's we're looking at this. The only information that we've gotten for Brownsville, for Operation Brownsville, which is bordered by Jackson Street, Kirk, Avery, and A Streets, the only information that we've got, we've been told to go to the calendar, and the sheriff and Mayor D.C. Reeves made a couple of, after I hounded him at the press conferences, made a couple of announcements about some stats, but nothing happened last week. Well, we're told. And this is a six-week thing that Escambia County Code Enforcement and Animal Control were out. We've got two things left. We've got a community conversation, not today, but on the June 12th. There's nothing this week either. You've got a gun violence and awareness for teens at 5:30 p.m. at Brownsville Community Center. And then there's going to be a movie night. Now, we don't know what the movie's going to be yet. We'll see what it's going to be, and it probably is going to be at the Brownsville Community Center. But at some point, we've got to figure out, this was supposed to be something that they would roll out to a pilot program. I don't know who's driving the boat or the plane, but is this really, we got to be honest with ourselves, is this really working?
You know, dogs really do chase mail carriers. It happens way more than you think it does. The United States Postal Service has shared that there were over 5,300 reported dog attacks on mail carriers last year.
Tinny was a part of that.
Did he buy the mail carrier?
No, he never bought a mail carrier. He was upset because he didn't get his magazines.
What does he subscribe to?
Vanity Fair.
That's what I was going to guess. that's exactly what I was going to guess. This is actually National Dog Bite Awareness Week. So that's why they released that stat. They advise owners keep your dogs in the house or behind a fence or away in another room when the mailman comes. Keep him safe.
In case you missed it over the weekend, I posted it on the blog. There's been a lot. Channel 3, WEAR, and the News Journal want to make a really big deal out of the Parks and Rec director and neighborhoods administrator being put on administrative leave. There's got to be something behind it. No, there's not. We have a new mayor. He said when he came into office, he's going to evaluate people over 90 days, not make a lot of changes right away. They hit the six-month mark, and he's making changes. They're put on administrative leave while they can receive their severance packages. And there are going to be more changes, folks. More are coming. We'll have D.C. Reeves on tomorrow. He'll talk about it. But this, to me, this is a nothing burger by a long shot. The other thing I put on my daily outtakes today on the blog, ricksblog.biz, just a couple things. One, this week, by tomorrow, we will hit 2,100 interviews. That's only after 15 months of being on the air. That is being half as long on air as any other radio show, morning show, in this market. Our podcast and downloads have hit nearly 164,000. In weekly, we're going to celebrate our 24th anniversary on July 1st. The blog has over 24,000 posts. It started in the spring of 2005. And this video, the video that we created for the book, City of Grudges, mm-hmm. you know, which Bud Light plays a very big role in, hint, hint, Lewis Bear Company, has had already 44,000 views on it. So just a lot of little, cute little milestones that we've hit in a very, very short period of time.
I don't know if you heard the news, but your buddy, Chuck Todd, is leaving Meet the Press. He announced it on the show.
I thought I saw him on the beach this weekend.
Yeah, he's on the beach.
Yep.
The 51-year-old Todd says he's step away in the coming months with Kristen Welker taking over the helm.
Yeah, the joke with Todd.
That's why I said his good friend.
Because when I went to Vegas for the presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they had a food court area in the Union where all the celebrities and me were able to get things. So, I'm in line getting a Coke with Chuck Todd, and I say, "Hi, Chuck." And he says, "Hi." And he gets away as quickly from this creeper as he can. And I took a picture of him walking away.
And I said, tweeted, "I just had a short conversation with Chuck Todd. Really short.
It was really short.
Really short.
But yeah, so Chuck Todd and I
go way back.
That's why he's resigning. So he can have more time with me. He has a house on Little Sabine rental. I think he still does over on Pensacola Beach.
You sound like a stalker now.
You and Elon. I'm not saying anything, but just not going to hit on that one. Be careful. But yeah, Chuck Todd did step away. Welker's going to take over the spot. And, you know, Chuck has been controversial. He's had some his moments. I think, really, Joe Scarborough really wanted that job. Then he realized he had to do it every weekend, and he'd have to go to a studio.
A lot of work.
And he'd have to go to a studio.
Have to actually be in the studio.
And wear pants. All those things kept him from taking that job. And, of course, they didn't offer it to him either. That was it.
And Todd was Todd's been in the host since 2014. I actually thought he'd been there longer. The show currently ranks third among the network political shows on Sunday morning behind Face the Nation and ABC's This Week.
Okay. Yeah, but and the changes are happening in NBC, how they're doing everything. Joe's still going strong, so don't worry about Joe. Somehow he survived. I know, you know, he and I used to be partners in the paper. Back then it was called the Independent Florida Sun, the longest name ever. He had the Florida Sun, we had the Independent. My stockholders, my investors forced us to merge. Joe did the job for about 5 months and went to go work for a law firm. And we've never heard from him since. But it has been a fun, interesting time ride going through all that. All right, let's go ahead. We'll give the news, weather, and traffic. When we come back, I want to talk about the Fred Waters Clinic.
Let me tell you a story of a girl up in glory. She had the world in her hand. Even Hades was a fire.
Welcome back. We're Real News with Rick Alton.
That's brand new music. I really like it. It's called Glory from Gabriel's.
Cool. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. We've got us on the phone, the man who knows what's going on with the Blue Wahoos, Bill Villona. Bill, good morning.
Rick, good morning to you. Happy Monday.
Happy. We did pretty good with the Beau Rivage Shuckers over the weekend. We're still in chart, head of the South Division.
Right.
You know.
Five games up.
Exactly. Just got to get it through the rest of this month, and then we know we've made the playoffs. Bill, one of the things, and for our listeners, Bill Vallone, a longtime sports editor with the Pensacola News Journal. He is he works with the Blue Wahoos now, keeps us on top of what's going on with all their games. But this weekend, the Wahoos are bringing back something that was a part of Pensacola for so long, the Fred Waters Clinic. Talk a little bit about that, Bill.
Well, Rick, we got our team owner, Clint Studer, to thank for this because he went to a banquet more than 25 years ago. The clinic started in 1990. Fred Waters, who was a longtime high school baseball coach in Pensacola, coached at Escambia for the bulk of that time, but also at Pensacola High and Tate, and won a pair of state championships at Escambia back in the 70s, was kind of what I refer to as a godfather of baseball in our area back in that era. Well, Clint went to a banquet that they had for the Fred Waters Clinic in the middle 90s, was at the Bay Center. He was just so blown away by what he saw. And then the last couple years, he said, is there any way we could revive this? So, thankfully, Kevin Soche, who was on one of those state championship teams at Escambia in 1974, also became a Major League Baseball player himself and won a World Series for the Philadelphia Phillies as a relief pitcher in 1980. Well, Kevin took the ball there along with Mike Russell, a longtime scout that lives in Gulf Breeze. They're at most all of the Blue Wahoos home games. They met with Quint, and I was part of that, and then they said, we'll get the guys as instructors. Let's just set a date. So we did this back in, January. Okay, so this weekend, June 10th, is going to be the clinic, a free clinic open to ages 7 years old to 12 years old, boys and girls. We're going to have softball as part of it as well, just as they did back then. And really, it's really gratifying. I mean, the Fred Waters Clinic went from 1990 to 2001. We're doing it as a one-day clinic from 9 a.m. to 12. We're going to split up the age divisions. It's free of charge. It'll be at Blue Wahoo Stadium. The very cool thing is the group of people that Kevin and Mike have assembled to help as instructors with Greg Litton, Tim Spoony Barger, Kevin Soche, Adron Chambers, right there. That's four guys that played in a World Series, along with Greg Litton, Phil Hyatt. We've got several others coming. And then a couple of our own Blue Wahoos players will be part of it. It's part of Major League Baseball's play weekend across the country at Major League ballparks and minor league ballparks. So we're excited to do this. This is going to be cool. And with this being the first year, we're just hoping now we'll make an inroad this year and then continue it.
You know, the voice you're listening to is Bill Vallone, longtime PNJ sports editor, now works with the Blue Wahoos. They're bringing back the Fred Waters baseball and now softball clinic this Saturday, 9 to 12 at Wahoo Stadium. 7 to 12-year-old kids, boys and girls, no fee. You know, Fred Waters was interesting, Bill, in that, you know, he coached high school ball, coached a lot of minor league ball. He was part of the Wahoos team back in the 60s that played where Veterans Memorial Park is. He played there, you know, for three seasons. He was sort of like a player coach. He was a starting pitcher, had a 2.04. I'm looking at Wikipedia. I wouldn't know this off the top of my head. He's tied to Pensacola Minor League Baseball. And I think that's a great tie-in to the Wahoos because y'all have been really from that early history of local minor league ball to looking with the Pensacola Pelicans to now the Wahoos. This is there's a history line here that y'all are living up to.
Well, Rick, Fred grew up in Denton, Mississippi, went to Southern Mississippi, where he played football and baseball, made his major league debut with the Pittsburgh Pirates in the middle 1950s, 1955. Then in 1958, Fred moved to Pensacola, and he settled in, and he ended his professional career. Like you said, Matt, that was when the minor leagues were using Class A, C, D. Pensacola was a Class D, which was the entry level, still affiliated with Major League Baseball in those days. Fred, 1962 was his last season as a professional player. Then this is when he went into coaching. He coached at PHS. He took them to a pair of state runner-up appearances. Then he went to Escambia and Tate. And really, he was with the Minnesota Twins organization for a long time, right, as a minor league manager in the summer league, the Appalachian League in Elizabethton, Tennessee, that's an area where I started my career, that Tri-Cities area up in Tennessee. Fred was there, and then he was with the Twins as a scout. But he really made his mark here as, like I said, just a mentor, a coach, a godfather to so many rising baseball players. And back then, Rick, Pensacola had so much talent that went on to the major leagues, like Dennis Llewellyn, like Kevin Sochet, like Preston Hanna, like Jimmy Presley. All of these guys, that anybody that played baseball back in that era knew Fred Waters, was mentored by Fred, helped by Fred. Fred had an impact on so many people in those days that, you know, both as the guys that went professionally, but just kids in general that played under him at high school or in the summer.
Right, right. Bill, thank you so much for coming on. Again, this is thank the Wahoos, and I'll reach out to Quint this week, but I think that this is just a part of Pensacola history to be able to continue that tradition. And then you've got a who's who of Pensacola baseball players there, which adds that extra juice to it.
Yes, and we're glad to do it. Like I said, thank Quint, because he was really the guy behind, hey, is there a way we can get this going?
All
and
right.
So we're going to get it going this Saturday.
Great. Bill, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, take care. It's the Fred Waters Baseball and Softball Clinic, Blue Wahoo Stadium, free of charge for kids 7 to 12. It starts at 9, goes to 12. I would imagine you need to bring a glove and be sure you're wearing the right kind of clothes. But this was a huge thing when we first moved here in the 80s. This is where kids would go. Scouts would see them. They learned some really good basics about their sports, and I'm sure that's the tradition that Major League Baseball, which is a part of this, and Wahoos and Quint Studer want to see happen. All right, let's go ahead and break. We'll give you the news, weather, and traffic. We'll be right back. I'm Rick Alton. Thank you for letting us be a part of your day. I tell you, I've started listening to podcasts. My daughters have listened to this show, and they said, Dad, you talk too much. You got to ask questions. You know, and cut back on the Red Bull and the Starbucks coffee before you come on. So I've tried to do a little bit better job today. I think we've done that. And Cena cuts off my mic more often, and that helps. Yeah, okay. All right. Listen, last Friday, some huge news came out of the Levin Papantonio Rafferty Law Firm. They have been fighting for clean water, not only in this community, but from around the country. It's a national settlement. And to talk about it, we've got Caleb Cunningham here. Caleb, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here with you today.
Yeah. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Thank you. Thank you for coming in. Caleb, tell us about this settlement.
Well, it's a huge deal. This is one of about 15 defendants that are sued in this lawsuit. It's a C8 PFAS case about firefighter foam,
right,
that they produced. We represent cities and all over the water providers all over the country. It's $1.185 billion,
wow,
with DuPont and a couple other chemical providers. And this is just one of the defendants. We're looking, the case that was supposed to start today has gotten postponed because now the other defendants wanted to settle.
And that was in Stuart, Florida. We had Wes Bowden and Ned McWilliams were going down there. as part of the team.
Well, they're in South Carolina, even though it's we represent Stuart, Florida.
Oh, it's Oak. I didn't realize that.
Right. We represent Stuart, Florida in South Carolina. That's where the case is being
tried. Okay. All right. I was trying to figure. Right. You know, and what's cool about the Levin Papatoni O'Rafferty Law Firm is y'all put together these consortiums, and so it's you're a local firm with a huge national and really international presence. And this is just that fact that you're representing the city of Stuart, Florida, but they're in South Carolina getting ready to try the case is amazing.
Well, you know, I'm very fortunate to be with them. There's some real heroes at that firm, and we've been working on this particular issue in one form or another for about two decades now. Mr. Papantonio did some of the early C8 stuff.
Oh, you could tell you've only been there a year because you call him Mister. But
I think if you meet him, you should call him Mister.
And he's wearing a suit, guy. He didn't get the dress code, y'all. He's wearing a suit. This guy's. But you, go ahead. I don't want to. You have a great story to tell.
Well,
I'm
you
sorry.
Know, Ned McWilliams and Wes Bowden, they've been working on this for a long time. They're kind of the chemistry nerds on this case, and this has been going on for a very long time. So to get the water providers this close to settlement and have some of the defendants settling now, the case actually got postponed today because now the other defendants are talking about settling.
You know, in PFAS, it's the foam that's used. It's a component of the foam, firefighters' foam. We know an issue of PFAS on NAS Pensacola. A lot of military bases have that issue. We've got wells here that have been shut down that ECOA had because of contamination from PFAS. And so this has a direct impact on the quality of water here, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. You know, to a larger degree, these companies poisoned everybody and everything on Earth with this chemical. You know, and I can go on and on about how long they knew and what all they did. It was in everything, but this particular case is just about firefighter foam. But backing up, PFAS was invented around World War II. They started mass production in the 50s. There's a great documentary out there if you're interested. Because if you're hearing my voice, you've been poisoned by this stuff. Without a doubt, it's in your blood. You have been poisoned. Your loved ones have been poisoned. And your children have been poisoned. I'm a former prosecutor. If I would have gone out and poisoned the water and killed somebody, they would have put me in prison. This company poisoned every living creature on Earth, and they're on the stock exchange. It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, and it's what are some of the medical conditions and diseases that are tied to PFAS?
Testicular cancer, ulcerative colitis, and kidney cancer. You have more than a doubling of risk, more than 100% chance of getting those cancers. There's a whole bunch of other cancers and bad things that you can get from this stuff, and it's in each and every one of us. And it was in our water because they call it a forever chemical. The sun won't kill it. Water won't kill it. It's here forever, and it moves in the ground like a cloud. It's a plume is what they call it. They sold it to the military. They sold it to firefighters. They said, hey, this stuff's great. It'll put out fire. It's a surfactant. It makes water slick. It's like a bubble bath out of control is kind of how I like to say. And you just leave it on top of the ground, the rain will wash it away. Well, it did, but it put it in the ground, and then they pumped it into the water, and we all got poisoned by it. That's what happened.
Right. The voice you listen to is Caleb Cunningham. He's an associate with Levin Papantonio Rafferty Law Firm. What we're talking about is a huge settlement, almost $1.2 billion that was reached last week with DuPont and a couple other companies dealing with PFAS, which is the foam that firefighters use for decades to put out fires, used for training. You know, it's in the water at NAS Pensacola. It's in the water in ECOA. They've had several wells that have been involved in it. So ECOA is a part of this settlement.
Correct. I mean, this part of the lawsuit, and like I said, there's been different slivers of this lawsuit going on for 20 years, mm-hmm. and they're going to be going on after this lawsuit's done. Because this PFAS chemical was in a whole bunch of stuff. It was famously in Teflon. It was in Scotchgard. They put this stuff everywhere. This particular lawsuit was just about, or primarily about, the firefighter foam that they were spraying at airports that the firefighters were using, and it was getting in all of our drinking water.
And for listeners, if you've kept up with it over the years, Mike Papantoni has been involved in several movies and documentaries about C8. That was the Teflon version of this, and it polluted the Ohio River. That case was a huge case, and the plant was in Parkersville, West Virginia, which it wasn't that far from another case I worked with Mike on or covered with Mike and Bobby Kennedy Jr. in Spelter when they were dealing with the zinc mining up there and refining process. It's in a state like ours that is trying to make it harder and harder to sue corporations for damages done, people that are injured, this is an important case to bring up for people to realize that corporations aren't always our friends.
No, particularly these corporations aren't our friends. I mean, they knew they were doing tests on rats, and they saw these problems. Then they started doing tests on monkeys, and they couldn't keep them alive. And so they started doing tests on dogs, and they couldn't keep them alive. And they knew that 20 years before they started poisoning everybody on Earth.
Yeah, the voice you listen to is Caleb Cunningham. Now, Caleb, you came from the state attorney's office. You know, I've known Mike Papantonio, worked at the state attorney's office, Eric Stevenson, a good friend of mine. So many of the good attorney, a lot of the good attorneys in town that I know, or let's say attorneys I know, maybe they're not that good, but is that they started off, you know, either in the public defender's office or in the state attorney's office. What advantage does that give you moving into civil?
Well, you know, as a former prosecutor, you go to trial. You put cases together.
Right.
You gather evidence and you work with law enforcement. And you say, I've got to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt to 12 people that we got off the street. Well, as a plaintiff's attorney working at Levin Papantonio Rafferty, that's what we do. But it's with corporations. And that's this corporation in particular, these corporations, they hid stuff in documents. They had all their testing. And so through subpoenas and depositions and great trial work on behalf of the attorneys, we're able to build a case and get people off the street and say, look at what they did. We proved this to you. We'll prove it to you. We promise we will. And that's what they're afraid of. That's why DuPont has settled, and I think that's why some others are going to settle before this goes to trial, because they do not want a circus out there in South Carolina and people seeing what they've done. I mean, what we already know, what's already in the public's eye, is just the most egregious behavior, because they're not our friend. I didn't consent to have this stuff in my blood, and if we went and tested my blood right now, it'd be all in there, because it's in our drinking water. We bathe it. We put it in our hair. It's everywhere.
Well, and the thing that gets me is that even this almost $1 billion settlement with DuPont, that's just a fraction of how much money they have made off of this product over a long period of time. I remember, Caleb, when you were still in elementary school, we were doing BP. And I was covering the BP story, and so many people were getting upset. And they were saying, well, you know, you're going to make them bankrupt, you know. And I kept thinking, you have no idea. And Mike Papantonio hit it really early on. He said, one day he said, Rick, it's going to be a $20 billion settlement. And that's what it ended up being. It took like 6-7 years to get to that point. And that money has revolutionized the Gulf Coast. Environmentally, we've said things happen. ST Aerospace, our economy has changed because of that settlement, but the impact was scary. But going back to just realizing that all the insulin case, all these settlements that y'all are able to get really is only a fraction. The leaders of these corporations already got their bonuses, their stock options, are retired. They're sitting on their yachts somewhere.
Right. Well, they ought to be sitting in prison, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. To give you an idea of how poison this stuff is, the EPA is coming out with limitations later this year. 4 parts per trillion is what they're going to put the national standard at. To put a part per trillion in perspective, because it's hard to comprehend, that's 1 second in 32,000 years.
Wow.
That's 1 part per trillion. So they say 4 parts per trillion, this stuff is bad, and we're seeing hundreds of part per trillion around the country.
Wow.
To put that in perspective, arsenic is allowed 10 parts per billion. That's a factor of 10. This stuff is worse than arsenic in the drinking water. And so these water providers all over the country are having to put in special filters to remove this stuff so the water's safe to drink. You know, some law firms, not us, some law firms were suing water providers, and personally, I think that's wrong. They didn't know what PFAS was. 3M, DuPont, these guys, they're the ones that put this stuff in the water. They're the ones that should pay. They're the ones that made money off of this, not me, you, the taxpayer. These companies that did this are responsible, and I became a lawyer to hold the bad guy responsible, whether that's in a criminal case or a civil case. And in this case, it's these defendants that we've named and that we've settled with DuPont and a couple others. I think when the others settle, it's going to be a huge, huge tens of billions of dollars.
Gosh. We've got with us Caleb Cunningham, associate with Levin Papantonio Rafferty Law Firm. 1 year with the firm. He's still got a nice suit. It's been pressed. You know, he is you know, he's coming. He came in early. You know, all the things that Troy, just letting you know, and came in early and doing this. This is, but what a chance to work with these guys. I mean, you're looking at some of the top names in plaintiff law. I mean, when you sit, you know, you're around a Troy Rafferty, you know, Tim O'Brien, you know, you're looking at, gosh, I mean, Mike Papantonio, and knowing the history of the Levins themselves, this is, when you walk into the room with this, and people know you at the Levin firm, that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, I always came from the public sector as a prosecutor, and I was doing good for the public. And, you know, a buddy of mine said, hey, come talk to these guys. They're great guys. And I knew of them. You know, it's one of the biggest plaintiff's firms in the country as far as their impact. And I talked to them. I was fortunate enough to go on with them. They talked me into it. And every day, it seems like we're working on a legacy case, a case that I'll be proud to tell my grandchildren that I got to work on. This is one of those cases. This is one of those cases where we got to change the world and make it a better and safer place for everybody.
Oh, that's great. Caleb, thank you so much for coming in today.
I appreciate you having me. Look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, we'll do this again. You did good. You did good. I'll send the note on. All right, let's go ahead and break. Cena's going to go and get her hair ready for Cowboy Mouth tonight. We'll be back. Real News with Rick Outson.
5. Real News with Rick Outson on Pensacola's News Talk 1370 WCOA.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Outson. Thank you for joining the show today. One of the cool things that we do on this show is our connections with ABC. Mike Dubuski is their technical reporter. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Fine. Apple is having its worldwide developer conference today. What can we expect?
Right. So the Worldwide Developer Conference is something that a lot of tech companies have a similar thing to this. They invite developers from around the tech space, people who make apps and that kind of thing, to their headquarters, and they show off their latest wares, right? That can mean software. We are expecting to see the software that's going to underpin the next iPhone today. But also that can mean hardware. And the sort of big announcement that people are looking forward to at WWDC this year is Apple getting into an entirely new product category, Rick, the world of virtual reality. We're expecting a mixed reality headset from them that is expected to cost around $3,000. So a big move for Apple here, and probably a big move for the VR space as well.
How do you expect that to work? Well, for that amount of money, it ought to go ahead and wash your clothes and make toast.
Right. Yeah, I know. It better, you know, get dinner together or something.
Exactly.
But I think the positioning of this is going to be a really interesting thing to watch today, right? You can do a lot of stuff with VR, right? Meta has, formerly Facebook, has placed a big emphasis on VR, specifically in the gaming space.
Right.
They have headsets that retail in the hundreds of dollars. Last week they announced a new one for about $500. And those have, games that you can kind of immerse yourself in. And that's one application. But then Microsoft has something called the HoloLens, which is an augmented reality headset that's used in military applications, right? You can, you know, do engineering projects or, you know, fix a broken helicopter or what have you with this headset, overlaying information on the thing that you're interacting with. So there's a whole broad spectrum of things you can do with VR. We don't really know exactly what Apple is going to, you know, pitch this as. According to Mark Gurman from Bloomberg, who is a guy who's very deeply sourced within Apple, there has been a video going around campus at Apple that shows people wearing these at parties, which means that there is going to be some form of pass-through, so you're not going to have your vision completely obscured. You're going to have a video feed to the exterior around you. I don't know exactly who would wear a VR headset to a party necessarily, but that is something apparently that they are working on. So, that is an open question exactly who they're targeting, but, you know, at $3,000, I don't expect them to, target a broad audience. This isn't going to replace your iPhone anytime soon, I don't think.
Well, I could see, you know, you talk about the military component, I could see it working heavily in the training area for law enforcement,
sure.
You know, any kind of training where it's, you can put them through a simulator, but using it with the headset on.
Right, yeah, and I mean, you know, enterprise applications like that, I'm sure, is something that Apple has been keeping an eye on. And you know, it's also worth mentioning that VR does provide something that traditional computers don't, right? And that is this sense of presence or co-presence in Apple's parlance. This idea that instead of interacting with someone over Zoom, which is a very limiting experience, you know, we saw that during the pandemic, obviously, and sort of the limitations around work calls over Zoom or Zoom school, for example, putting on a VR headset, you know, you can interact with a science project in your kid's science class, or you can have a more, you know, personal conversation, feeling that the people that you're, you know, in VR with are actually sitting close to you when, in fact, you know, they're around the country or around the world. The flip side of that, of course, is that VR does make a lot of people motion sick, right?
Right.
The movement of your head doesn't always keep up with the motion of the thing that you're seeing, and that, you know, creates, you know, some tension within people and causes many people to be sick. That's something that Apple's going to have to overcome. You know, it is very expensive, so it is a limiting factor there. And the VR space in general, Rick, has failed to take off in a way that we were kind of expecting 2 years ago. Facebook renamed itself Meta in 2021, put a lot of investment into the VR space, and we really haven't seen it pan out. They have not sold as many of their headsets as we thought they were going to, or they thought they were going to. And, you know, there's a way to look at this as like, oh, Apple's entering a hot, interesting new segment, but they're also kind of showing up late to the party.
Well, and whoever can get it plugged into the lifestyle of everyday people at
right.
a price that'll work. Who goes to this conference, Mike?
It's mostly third-party developers, so people who make apps. And I think that's important, you know, to note when we talk about VR headsets, right? The iPhone is an amazing piece of technology, but it is bought and sold on what you can do with it, and that
mm-hmm.
is the apps, right? It is ordering food through the Grubhub app or figuring out what song you're listening to using Shazam. Those are third parties. That's not Apple developing that technology. That's somebody else. And, you know, what that looks like in the VR space is sort of an open question. We don't know what Apple's conception of a VR app will look like, and a lot of that is going to come down to the developers today. Another thing to note is that we don't really expect Apple to put this thing on sale immediately. Normally, when Apple has an event like this, they'll show off an iPhone and they'll say you can pre-order it today, and then it goes on sale next week. This, I think more people are expecting it to be a preview, and then it might go on sale in the fall. That might be an indication of, you know, Apple giving developers a little bit more time to figure out what their apps look like in VR and whether they can actually execute on a holistic VR experience for their apps, giving them a little bit more runway to do that, because this is a completely new platform for them, and that's a pretty significant move. And I think it's, you know, remains to be seen whether it's going to pay off for Apple.
Oh, great. Mike, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Of course. Take care, Rick.
All right, take care. Yeah, I just was thinking about it. You know, one of the things that could be used for is watching a NASCAR race. I mean, I'm not a NASCAR guy. A lot of things I'm not, but my son-in-law loves it. And I can just imagine with one of these, you know, with the VR head, you know, I want to call it a headset on, that they already have it where you can watch on the different channels, and you can pick which driver's car you want to be in and see what that driver is seeing as they're going around the course. But you could add to that by if you just put the headset on. And then you go sit over in the corner, and we won't have to talk to him anymore. So that may be that's an option that's out there. We'll see how this gets played, because it's always about the application. What part of our life can we make this work? And that's where we are with ChatGPT and AI is, you know, how can we integrate it in our lives? So I think that's a huge factor. Last Friday, or last week, News Services of Florida published a story that we're getting a step closer to having a constitutional amendment on the ballot next year for whether or not to have recreational marijuana. The group that's the political committee that's doing is Safe and Smart Florida. You have to get almost 900,000 signatures on a petition to have it added to the ballot. Now, the state legislature can do it and put it on the ballot, and they've done that in the past. But for the public, for the voters, for the general public to get something on the ballot to change the Constitution or amend the Constitution, it takes a petition. You have to have 891,523 valid signatures on the ballot. They've turned in 967,000 signatures, which it takes a while to sort through it, be sure they're all valid. Sometimes they're not. You know, so that puts them in a safe spot. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be on the ballot yet. There are two other pieces that have to happen. Attorney General Ashley Moody is challenging this So that has to be decided. And then ultimately the Florida Supreme Court needs to make the decision whether or not it's going to be on the ballot. So that's, so we still got a ways to go with this, but keep an eye on it. I think I've done enough damage. Stacey Knowles will come in. We'll be back tomorrow. Real News with Rick Outson.